Welcome to Making a Difference, a Junction Journalism production. I'm Sophie Norris. This episode of Making a Difference has been produced by journalism students at Charles Sturt University on Wiradjuri country. It's one of a series of specials the Junction will be running in the lead up to the federal election this year. In this episode, we'll bring you a snapshot of the candidates running for the seat of Clare. Luckily, we could get interviews with five of them, but we will still provide some information on United Australia Party's Adam Jenness, who we have not yet received response from. Clare covers 32,660 square kilometres, and as of the 2016 census, there were 161,298 people living in it. Clare covers an area from Lithgow in the east to Eugowra in the west, Wellington and Midwestern Regional Councils in the north, to Blaney Shire Council and Oberon Council in the south. The main cities and towns included are Bathurst, Blaney, Canoundra, Eugowra, Googong, Candos, Lithgow, Molong, Oberon, Orange, Mudgee, Portland, Rylstone, Wallerang and Yeovil. We will go in the order the candidates will appear on the ballot paper. I got the chance to catch up with Kate Hook, independent member for Clare. So Kate, what motivated you to move to Clare about 16 years ago?
I had grown up in the country anyway. I grew up in Wagga Wagga, and I had gone to Sydney like most people do for the last couple of years at school, for university, my first jobs, had a couple of years in the UK. So I sort of had the city living, but always in my heart, I think I knew I was a person who belonged in the country. So coming back here again, there was a job offer back in my hometown of Wagga actually, and in Orange for my husband at the time. And you would think that I would have chosen Wagga because that's where I grew up, but there's something about this region that just really grabbed me. Really beautiful, love the people, and love the fact that it was buzzing and people having a go. And so, yeah, it had to be here.
What was your occupation before deciding to run as a candidate in the election?
I started a business with an electric car, which I own, called Ecolux Transfers. So that's a ride-sharing business between Orange and Sydney mainly. And lots of business customers who lived in Orange and worked in Sydney. As I would take passengers in this car, and I had a couple of drivers who did the same, the conversation would always be around why electric vehicles is the way of the future. So it kind of was sort of in line with what I'm trying to do anyway, in terms of making people aware of that particular issue.
Your two main policies are climate action and regional economics. If elected, how will you personalise these policies to fit Clare?
Because it is very different in Clare versus other areas. The key one about the climate issue, it's an economic issue as well as an issue of urgency, you know, a scientific issue. So when I think about my top two policies, one is strong regional economies that are future focused. They look at the jobs of the future, and they look after, as I said, communities that have relied on old industries. So for energy production, you know, they still need to remain. We still need to remain in an energy producing region. We just have to do it in a different way. So that is a massive economic opportunity for us. So we have a piece of research from a professor, Andrew Blake, is from Australian National University, and he has, his group, RE100, has looked at every single federal electorate in Australia. So there are 151 federal electorates. The top two that will benefit economically from the clean energy transition include us in Clare and the next door one in Hume, which is Angus Taylor's electorate. So that is an opportunity that will only come to us if there's planning and leadership and you know, optimising the opportunity. You know, our greatest challenge at the moment is climate change. Like, we have to be clear on that. All of the other policies that appear in my top 10, like access to health, you know, equitable education for people, aged care, disability care, you know, empowering women, you know, humane treatment of asylum seekers and doing the right thing, you know, by our First Nations people. All of those things are undercut by us not doing the right thing on climate change. You know, we can be doing all this great work in those other areas, and it can be all for naught if we don't do what we need to do this decade, which is a critical one for action on climate change. So yeah, you're right. It's an economic opportunity. It's also, you know, scientifically what we have to do, but there's also the human element as well. We need to do that in order to do well in all those other areas. areas.
What impact do you think an independent will have on Calais?
Oh, incredible impact. I mean, we've seen it before with the last independent we had was a guy called Peter Andren. Look, what people got and what people saw worked in that situation is that they could have someone whose first priority was representing this region and representing the people.
Calais is often titled a safe seat. What is your take on this?
I think in the past that was probably correct, that it was seen as a safe seat. However, we proved, as I said, with the previous example of the other independent, Peter Andren, that it wasn't as safe as people thought, or it's massively not safe. Or it's more that people could see that an independent was a credible option. So, you know, people could still see themselves, for example, as a Conservative voter and vote for an independent. People could still see themselves as a socially conscious voter and vote for an independent, because either way, you're getting someone who listens to what your community wants and is willing to take that to Canberra.
If you could describe yourself as a, I suppose, a person and a politician in just a few words, what would they be?
Determined, dedicated, a big picture thinker, and doing this from a point of view of care and love and compassion. I think that's what people see as missing in politics at the moment. You know, politics can often be seen as a game, a point scoring exercise, or a shallow marketing exercise. That's what I'm determined to move away from, because politics actually has serious consequences, you know, both for health and for, you know, safety. So, I think all of those things that I just described, that's me and that's what I'm offering.
Next up, we have Stacey Whittaker, the One Nation candidate for Calais.
It's great to have you on the show this morning. So let's just start off. How has the campaign been going? It's been a busy campaign, I'm sure.
It sure has been. Yes, we've been out and about. Well, it's pre-polling this week. So I've been over in Orange manning the booth over there for this week, and it's been really good. I've always been enjoying the whole process, being out and about and talking with people in the community, so it's been good.
Yeah, and so far have a lot of people been coming to the pre-polling in Calais?
I know there's been a lot in Orange, and I also, well, from what I've heard in Bathurst also, there's been a lot of people as well. So it is very interesting. But unfortunately, the booths aren't in the most ideal spots in Bathurst and Orange, but it is what it is. It's what we've got to work with.
Well, have you got any upcoming events or preparations you've got coming up?
No, I don't have any more forums. There was one last night which I actually missed, because I'd been 10 hours on the booth in Orange.
Oh, no.
I think my poor old legs needed this evening. I was starting to certainly feel my age by the end of the day.
Needed a bit of a break.
I did, I know. But anyway, I've got the opportunity. I'm certainly catching up with people out and about, so if anyone has any questions, I'm always available anyway. But that's it now for the forums. Now it's just getting down to the pointy end of the stick.
So have the One Nation got any more announcements or policies that have been put in place recently before the election, or still going with
that?
Not
that I'm aware of. We've got our new health policy, which is only one of the newer ones.
And what's that about?
That's about encouraging health workers who have just recently graduated, so that's regardless of what health industry you're in, to be relocating for 3 years to regional areas and on 3-year contracts. So you've got to fulfil the entire contract. And at the end of that 3 years, your HEX debt is completely paid for. Because you usually find once people move into an area, a regional area, well, then they seem to put roots down, especially if they're moving with their family and things like that, and kids start school, and, you know, and you find you may be able to capture them for the long term, which is what we're wanting, not people coming and going all the time. I know people find it hard at their GP now to build a rapport with their local doctor, because they're only there for a short term and then they're off again. You know, it'd be great if we could get some more stability back into the health sector. And, of course, mobile phone connection as well through rural areas. I started, that was one of my campaign pushes, and one of the main reasons why I put my hand up to run is let's get, you know, we don't even have to go far out of Bathurst and you can lose mobile phone service, and we shouldn't be. So that's something also that I'm pushing, not just for the you know, the safety of people out on the road requiring they need mobile phone service. But if your car breaks down and things like that, You know, I've heard a lot of stories where people have been on the side of the road for 4 or 5 hours through the night waiting for cars to come past to help them out because their car's broken down. So, and they've had no service. So, you know, it's just these little things that I like to chip away at.
Yeah, so just making sure, I guess, yeah, keeping that community focus and rural focus.
Because at the end of the day, yes, while I am a, you know, the One Nation candidate, Calais is my focus and where I am, you know, Calais is what why I'm standing and the region of Calais is what I'm wanting to make better, I suppose. And can I also just mention, we have people volunteering at polling booths. If people can just be nice to them, because at the end of the day, they are just volunteering. If you're not happy with, and I've seen volunteers from different parties be not well spoken to by members of the general public, but at the end of the day, they're just there volunteering their time, handing out a pamphlet. If you're not happy with that party, we'll go in and make your vote count to how you would like it. Mm-hmm. Don't take your frustration with a particular party out on the person that's handing out how to vote cards. You know, at the end of the day, they're just volunteers and they need to be treated nicely. So they're not getting paid to be there. They're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. So, you know, a little respect goes a long way.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll look forward to seeing you around the electorate with pre-polling.
The next candidate is Kay Nankervis, the Greens candidate for Calais.
All right, so what was your previous career and background before running for election?
Well, before I put my hand up to run for election, I was a university lecturer here at Charles Sturt University, teaching theatre media in the last few years I was here, and before that teaching journalism. Because before that, again, I had been a journalist, a graduate of what was then Mitchell College a long, long time ago, which was now Charles Sturt University, of course. And I worked for a long time, a little bit in commercial radio, but mostly for the ABC, in radio first of all in the 80s and then in TV in the 90s, working in current affairs in radio and for the rural department and doing a lot of federal politics then and then a lot of state politics in the 90s when I was working in television.
Yeah, wow. So I guess you've really learnt how to communicate ideas and be able to talk, how you, yeah, make sure everyone understands what's going on, yeah.
Well, the reason I'm standing for election is because I think a lot of people don't understand the Greens and they don't understand that a lot of our policies are actually how the average person thinks and wishes the other major parties would operate. And so I thought, in this electorate, because the Nationals have such a strong margin, it's very unlikely the Greens will get up, but I thought, I want to articulate the ideas and stand up for the ideas that the Greens support so that people who already think that way have the option to vote that way and show the major parties they think that way, but also to make people understand those issues.
Why did you want to join politics in the first place?
I've always been interested in politics, and in some ways I've always been active to the extent I could be when I was working as a journalist and I had to be objective. My first foray, I first understood that there was inequality in this world and people don't get what they deserve, A, from studying Asian social studies in high school, and I learnt the inequalities globally, but also reading a book by George Orwell called Down and Out in Paris and London,
right,
which opened up my eyes to the fact that people in poverty in developed, rich countries are not there because of any fault of their own, that people are the victim of circumstance and that we need to acknowledge that people, vulnerable people, need to be looked after. So that made me realise that some of what I'd learnt about, you know, work hard, you'll do okay, doesn't always flow, and that some people start way behind. So that made me interested. Plus the peace movement. I joined, the way in which I was most active straight away was in 1981. I was one of the founding members of Amity, which was the local peace group on campus at Mitchell College, because back then the Soviet Union and the United States had a huge arsenal of nuclear weapons. And we, on the basis of what was called mutually assured destruction, that they wouldn't fire them because if once you started firing, we'd all die.
Yep.
And so I watched a lot of scary movies. I thought I'd never have children because I was so frightened for the world. And so I was involved in that, and I handed out for the Nuclear Disarmament Party when Peter Garrett was standing for them in the mid-'80s. And that was how I got into the environment movement too. And of course I could see, you know, I always wanted to fight pollution and emissions, and the greenhouse debates only started in the mid-'80s.
Yep.
And so that I jumped on board with that. And also I'm a big human rights person. I want to fight injustice, and I think there's a lot of injustices in this world and structural injustices. So I want to fight for the person, the every person who's left out, who gets dropped, who doesn't get looked after by a society that actually has a great structure for looking after people, but people fall through the cracks.
And I know that the Greens and yourself have social housing higher on your agenda for this year. Why pushing for social housing so much? What makes you really want to help that community?
Housing and having a home is a basic human right. Mm. No one can move forward and fix their lives unless they know they have security in where they live. There's a huge number of Australians. There's always been a problem with public housing, people on waiting lists for 10 years. My parents lost their home. I grew up in a beautiful middle-class existence when I was 13, and I experienced the insecurity they felt when they had trauma about having lost their home through bad business decisions, and the insecurity they had that they never knew how they were going to live in retirement. And yet they were articulate, able people, still able to work, apart from the mental illness that was attached to not having safe housing. And I think, God, so many people start out in life in insecure housing. We need to fix it. We need to fix the housing market, because the problem with the housing market used to be something that happened in the major cities. That has now spread at such a rate in the regions. The cost of mortgages is huge in the regions now. You don't move to the regions anymore because you can't afford to live in Sydney, because you can't afford to live in the regions. No. The housing market is broken. The Greens want to fix that by building a lot more public housing over 20 years, 1 million public houses, mm-hmm. funded in different ways, to take the pressure off the limits on housing that are available within the market as well. Mm-hmm. Basically, we want to look after the planet. That's our biggest home. But we want to make sure everyone has a home that they can feel safe in, whoever they are, how old or young they are, so that the people that they bring into the world, if you're at the age of parenting, you are in a position to raise strong, resilient people who have a great start in life.
Next, Sophie Watson chatted to incumbent member Andrew G, representing the National Party.
So how's the campaign been going for you?
Look, it's been going well. I've really enjoyed it, and every campaign is different. This is my fifth campaign now. So, there are different candidates, different parties. Last time it was the Shooters running. This time we've got a Teal candidate, and obviously parties like United Australia Party, mm-hmm. and all sorts of things. So it's been really good. I've enjoyed getting to know the candidates. It's been a really positive experience, and the polls are now open. So it's been great getting out and about, listening to what people have got to say as they go through to pick up their how to vote.
And so were you out and about on Monday for the pre-polling?
Yeah, I've been out on pre-poll, so it gives you a good gauge on what people are thinking and what they're doing. And I've really enjoyed it. And we've still got some really good announcements rolling out, Sophie. And so I just wanted to mention a couple today.
Yeah, definitely.
Firstly, Dixon's Long Point. This is the crossing between that links Cabon and also Mudgee over the Macquarie River. There's a new bridge going in there. Mm-hmm. And we are now, we've got almost $30 million for the new bridge. That project is out to tender. But we've now got new funding, an extra $5 million to start stage two, which is putting the roads towards Cabon and Mudgee on either side. So the $30 million provides the bridge and about 1K of ceiling on the Cabon side and 2K of ceiling on the Mudgee side. Now we've got a further $5 million to just basically keep the ceiling going. Now, we're obviously going to need more than that, but I think this is really great news. The federal government is very much committed to this project, and obviously more funding for that ceiling will be needed. But people have been trying to get this project up and running for 170 years. So the project went out to tender a couple of weeks ago. So very exciting news for everyone who's been trying to get Dixon's Long Point up and running. So that was a very positive announcement. Got a couple of good health announcements too, which have just come up. So this is a good one for the Bathurst and the whole region. So there's going to be a new regional training hub for medical students to train across the electorate, including those studying at the Western Sydney Uni Charles Sturt University joint program in medicine. So this is the CSU Medical School. So Western Sydney Uni, which bases their training in Bathurst, is going to be running this regional training hub. And basically it's going to make sure that anyone, any of those young doctors who are doing work or even students working in the our region will have better support, advice, training, and also placement opportunities for their training. And so that's going to be run out of Bathurst, but it will benefit the whole region. So great to see that we're looking towards the future of our medical workforce, and that Western Sydney Uni, which has been doing great work in our region, is going to be taking that one and running with it. So we got it done because we had the support of our communities, and I think we can all be very proud of that. Great to see medical training is at the forefront of our thinking, because there are more GPs in Sydney and the big cities than there are in the country. And another exciting piece of news, this time centred in and around Orange, but helping the whole region, was that there's going to be an adult mental health satellite for the region. So it's a head-to-health adult mental health satellite service. It'll be run through the Western New South Wales Primary Health Network. They'll get $3.4 million over 4 years to establish and operate the satellite. And it's basically bolstering adult mental health services. So we've got Headspace for youth, and the Head to Health adult mental health service, it will just be another form of support in our area. So it'll include right across our region. And it's great to see that support coming through, including during an election campaign where, you know, I think sometimes everyone talks about the big issues, and there are some big national issues that are of importance, but those crucial services that make such a difference are really important too. And I've been really proud that during my time as the local member for Calair, we've been able to expand mental health services, including Headspace. So we got Headspace expanded into Lithgow. We've got extra funding recently for Headspace services. But it's an ongoing issue, and I think we've seen through the trials and tribulations that we've been through, including drought and bushfires and COVID, that it's been a very tough time for people. And so there's been a real focus on mental health and destigmatizing it, and making sure that people are comfortable in getting the help that they need. And I think that's coming through, which is really positive news. And I think it's really important as a local member that we work as communities to achieve these results. And that's what I've always endeavoured to do as a local member. And I think together, working with our communities, we've got some really important runs on the board that we can be really proud of. And so it's as we run into this election, I'm running on my record, but we're also looking to the future and making sure that our country communities are in the best possible position to thrive, and that we've got an unbeatable quality of life out here, and that we also have the jobs and the industry out here that we need. The wealth of the nation's got to be based on what we make and what we grow and what we sell. And I think there are some great opportunities out here for country Australia to, and our region, to really be the powerhouse of the national economy.
Next on the program, Noah Seckham talked to Labor candidate Sarah Elliott.
So my name is Sarah Elliott, and I'm the Labor candidate for Calair.
Okay, so first question, what was your professional career before politics?
Okay, before politics, and in a lot of ways, probably still at this present point of time, my professional career is that I am a registered nurse and midwife. I also teach nursing and midwifery academically, so I'm sort of leaning into that academic area as well.
What inspired you to take up politics?
What inspired me, partly being a registered nurse and a registered midwife working in community, you are brought into contact with a wide range of people, and that includes people in more disadvantaged and more low socioeconomic areas. And you can really see how poor policy can make and break people. And very sadly, I can see policy breaking people more than making them. And that is really, really distressing. And as a nurse, we have our own frameworks to work around to refer people to try to help them. But sometimes you start looking out that sphere and say, how can I make this better? There's got to be something more I can do. And so that led me into politics.
If elected, what change do you personally want to see for Calair?
Personally, I'd like to see improvements to rural health. Rural health is in crisis out here. We need to ensure that our GPs are supported. We need to ensure that GP training is supported, and more incentives are given
to GPs, including that professional respect that they are recognised as a specialty area, like cardiothoracic surgeons are, for example. We need to ensure that they respect and that they are able to stay out here in the country areas. I'd like to see good transport infrastructure. Labor does have really, really good suite of policies, including rail transport infrastructure. We seem to have had so much investment in roads, some for good reason, but some for reasons that are a little bit questionable. We need more public transport. We need more, investment in rail to get around for our freight as well as for passenger services as well.
Where does Clare fit into the broader scope of Labor's national campaign?
Clare is very much a regional and rural electorate, so it falls in Labor's scope of its regional and rural policies for industry development, decentralising government services from Sydney and bringing them to the region so that there is a greater diversity of industry and jobs. We also have rural health initiatives, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of the New South Wales public inquiry or parliamentary inquiry into rural health. But it's going to be a lot of things that I think federally we'll need to look at as well. Housing, of course, it's an overarching problem for the entire electorate. It's not confined to the cities anymore, it's now in the regions, and Labor will need to look very close. And we do have some policies around housing. We've got, looking at liaising with local governments and state governments to build social housing. We also have the equity, the home equity policy that's just come in, and I'm hoping a bit later we can review a few other things and maybe implement them later on if Labor takes government.
Considering how safe the Nationals appear to be in the lead up to the election, what do you hope to achieve with this in campaigning for Labor?
Look, we have a 13.3% margin in Clare, which makes it essentially a safe seat. What we can achieve, sometimes you can't achieve an outright win, but what you can achieve is that you can reduce that margin. You can show that Labor has a good presence, which, given how late we were into this campaign, sounds a little bit ridiculous, really, but we can still show that we have a presence. We can build Labor's profile, show that we have good policies that can benefit Clare and hopefully reduce some of that margin right down. And that will set up the next election, possibly to maybe get that win that we're hoping for.
How have pre-selection delays impacted your campaign?
Actually, well, I probably had one of the easiest pre-selections you could actually ask for. When I realised that there was no one running for Clare, I sort of said, well, maybe I should put my hand up, not expecting to be taken seriously, and here I am. So there was no one in opposition. There was no opponent to make a case against as to why I would be the better candidate. Everything snowballed really, really quickly, but for some reason came to a big halt in that final month. We ended up in a group of five electorates, I presume unheld seats, that went before the National Executive. Exactly why it went to the National Executive, I don't know, and I probably won't find out. But it took a long, long time, and we didn't get endorsed until after the election was called at the very last possible moment, which was really hard for us because I guess the impact from that is that it has robbed us of a lot of campaign time. So we've had to hit the ground running. We've had to do what we can with what little time we've got. Yeah. So here we are.
Finally, although we did not yet receive a response, Adam Janis is the United Australia Party's candidate for Clare. Mr. Janis is a passionate health and fitness educator and business owner who grew up in his family's fish and chip shop in Wellington, New South Wales. He started schooling at Wellington Christian School before continuing at St. Mary's Catholic School until finishing year 10. Mr. Janis decided to put his hand up and run as a federal member of parliament for the seat of Clare because he is eager to be a voice for his electorate. He says he loves his community, this beautiful region, and he wants to stand up for the people of Clare and Australia by bringing some new ideas to Canberra. And that information about Adam Janis finishes our program. For more election coverage from the best student journalism in Australia, go to our website, junctionjournalism.com. I'm Sophie Norris, and don't forget, a new episode of Making a Difference is produced every month. You can subscribe on your favourite podcast app. Thanks for listening.